A central theme that I've been teaching in my courses on drug addiction for the past 30 years is that drug addiction is an equal opportunity affliction. Unfortunately, this is news to too many of my advanced undergraduate psychology students. After just a few weeks of examining the diversity of case studies and then provided with a simple model that unifies the many paths to addiction to a single cause, students become excited about the recent progress in understanding drug addiction and fully expect that neuroscientists will find the cure in short order. That is, now having recognized what really drives addiction, shouldn't scientists be able to quickly resolve this disorder, which extracts such a horrific toll on the individual, on their friends and family, and on society? The message that we, basic scientists, have known for years, but popular media, many clinicians, and even too many misguided drug addiction specialists have managed to keep the pond muddied by stirring up the waters with popular discourse and dramatic portrayals, played out in endless psychodrama that captivates audiences every time across time. In my primary drug addiction course, I've taught nearly 3,400 level students during the past 26 years at the University of Buffalo. Surely there should have been a multiplicative effect of my training as they go out and spread the word, as the next generation of physicians, clinical psychologists, counselors, sociologists, and yes, even politicians. And there's the scores of other professors just like me, some teaching the simple theme even longer. But at last, popular misconceptions like superstitions are just too damn hard to kill off. And today's insight will probably remain a new discovery for another 25 years as this professor retires, and hopefully the next one carries the torch, educating and enlightening thousands more during his or her tenure as a university professor. The more things change, the more they stay the same. The psychobiological model that I teach is rather simple. It's based largely in what is termed the exposure model of addiction. Basically, exposure to an addictive substance and the subsequent effect on brain reward and motivation pathways leads to an addiction for many people. The variety of personalities and subcultures that become addicted is also a product of exposure, but with the added feature of psychosocial factors which govern such variables as who has access to the drug, who will experiment with the drug, the cost and purity of the drug, which drug or drugs are popular and how they're administered, and who will find sufficient extrinsic rewards in the culture of their drug-taking behavior, peers who encourage actual drug-taking and its ancillary behaviors. These contribute to continuing drug-taking behavior long enough for the critical neuroadaptive effects to occur, which are ultimately responsible for an addiction. This is where the psychological and sociological variables exert an important influence on who is and is not likely to ultimately become an addict during the early acquisition stage of developing an addiction. There is plenty of room for popular psychosocial and cultural variables to play a role in addiction and to present cyclic variation in types of people who become addicts. The role is just much different than commonly perceived. There are also high-risk groups, some genetically predisposed to experience an exceptionally strong motivating effect from their early drug use, and there are comorbid disorders which may introduce a variety of secondary influences on the drug's pharmacological effects. Nonetheless, the exposure model provides a point of convergence for the sundry personalities and subcultures that find the allure of drug irresistible. The drug is guilty. The addict makes one critical mistake. They sustain their initial use of the wrong drug sufficiently long for the neurochemical sequelae to develop, which leads to an addiction. The popular media, from talk shows to Hollywood movies, will probably never get on the page and portray the real story behind addiction. They will continue to promulgate the popular myths about addiction, finding better dramatic material in the cases that admittedly have an interesting story to tell about why they began their illicit substance use, while obscuring the fact that it wasn't actually the perverted Uncle Albert, but the drug which is the responsible agent for the addiction. The truth simply doesn't make a good story. Mary sexually abused by her grandfather, Tom bullied as a child, or Nancy stressed out by her failed sex change surgery are much more entertaining to watch and read about, and they elicit much more empathy from viewers who can relate to the various aspects of the anguish that leads to their addiction. watching young people experience the intense rush produced by crack cocaine, bouncing from stranger to stranger on the street, looking for money for the next fix to feed their cocaine craving, as the home audience chanting in unison, they get what they deserve, and then quickly turning to another program. The market writes the message. During Alan Lishner's tenure as the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse between 1994 and 2001, addiction as a brain disease became the mantra of the Institute. Whether it's a disease, disorder, or syndrome may be debatable, but it's certainly a brain something, unless one wishes to accept pixie dust as the mechanism behind drives and motives, lusts and desires. The patterns are easy to explain. Simply examine the psychological and sociocultural variables that initiate and sustain the period of early drug use. There, your personality types, sociological subgroups, and other patterns will emerge, based on who tries the drug, not on why they try the drug. No requisite personality types or pixie dust required. The chemicals in the drug interact with the chemicals in the brain. It's that simple. I'm Dr. Michael Bozarth for the Addiction Science Network. These podcasts are copyright 2012 by the Addiction Science Network. They are produced in collaboration with the State University of New York at Buffalo and are provided solely for educational purposes. Podcasts can be directly downloaded from www.addictionscience.net. Transcripts are also available for some podcasts at our website, as are other documents and commentaries regarding drug addiction and select topics on psychopharmacology. These podcasts can be copied and freely distributed as long as the source is acknowledged and provided they are not edited in a manner which changes the fundamental meaning of the selected passages when quoted out of context of the entire presentation. Correspondence from professional colleagues is welcomed and can be sent to info@addictionscience.net. We do not offer clinical services, nor do we usually have time to reply to questions emailed from the general public. When listening, please keep in mind that these podcasts are targeted for academic and professional listeners. Everyone is invited to share any information they find useful, but our target audience is not the general public. Finally, please note that the Addiction Science Network is the sole author of this work, and views and opinions expressed herein should not be construed as official policy of the State University of New York.